Welcome once again into the Soccer OG. Hey, that's me, Max Bretos, episode 190. As a reminder, rate, review, download, subscribe, and tell a friend. I know you don't need a reminder, but that's what reminders are for. So appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. Some excellent content here coming your way. We're here in Los Angeles. It is pissing down rain. And it's been, I mean, we're expecting rain on more days than you don't expect it, which is crazy. But that's the way it is. We get all cozy inside. I know bad weather everywhere. So we'll stay indoors together for the meantime. Bumper show today. A couple guests will be joining me in the business end. Brian Sciarretta of American Soccer Now will be talking about the Nations League roster. We are days away from the announcement. He has some really interesting tidbits and news as to who may not be there, who might be making it and starting that you may not expect. Stay tuned to that, because one thing I'll tell you about Brian, he shoots down, he has no agenda, he just tells you the situation of these players and who he thinks based on his relationship with coaches and what's going on currently with these clubs and these players, what it's going to look like. And he changed my mind on a couple players as well, so stay tuned for that. You may have seen me this past weekend in Salt Lake, a snowstorm unlike any other. My broadcast partner, Brian Dunseth, will be joining me in Check Complete. We'll talk about that historic day, a game that probably should not have continued on, but we will talk about a broadcasting experience that we will never probably experience again and probably don't want to, but it was good to see it one time so you know how to react. We'll also have a few little MLS tidbits, a little bit of the W Gold Cup, a little Champions League. We start that with the rundown, which begins right now. We are recording this on a Wednesday night. I am in between games of the W Gold Cup. Last week, Lori Lindsay joined us to discuss the state of the U.S. Women's National Team and this tournament, which has been really pleasantly surprising. Mexico at the top of that list. We're watching the games at Snapdragon. We'll talk more about this next week. We'll bring in one of the guests who were participating in the coverage for Paramount. Really nice effort from all parties there. We will talk about how that tournament ends up in their business end. My business end's coming up here shortly. But it's been a great success, because when you think of the W Gold Cup, and mentioned this to Lori Lindsay, you think USA probably just running through that competition. They added some very good South American teams. Brazil, who thumped Mexico in the semifinals, headed to the final. I would imagine Brazil is going to win this based on the form of everyone else, although I should not discount Canada. Canada's been very good. But you'll probably listen to this you will listen to this podcast after the U.S.-Canada game, and we'll discuss that more. I just want to give an overall comment about the W Gold Cup, that it is proven in its first edition that it belongs, and you can't assume anything with the results. We've had enough good surprises. You had two big semifinals, USA-Canada and Mexico-Brazil, that were easy to promote. The only drawback would be that if Brazil wins it, winning a gold cup, not great for our federation, but the heck with it. We should be joined at the hip with South America. One day I think we will be. I think that's irresistible at this point, that common sense will prevail and there will be a merging of the regions. Maybe CONCACAF and CONMEBOL will remain, but there will be a shared experience just by the mere fact that's the only way they will keep up with UEFA, which is kicking everyone's tail. And then maybe there's a relationship with CAF or the AFC. You know, we can dream big, but we'll talk about that. I just think the Gold Cup is going to be very pleased with it. They didn't know what they had when they went in, but they had enough talking points, and they're going to have a wonderful final, whether it's Brazil-Canada or Brazil-USA. That's good for the game. It also reinforces the fact that women's soccer is on a rocket ship. It is. And you could sit here and say, no, it's compelling. You know, it really is. We know names of the players, not just on our shores, but across the Atlantic and down in South America. And, you know, Linda Caicedo and the Tunisian women who went through. It's in great, great shape. And the W Gold Cup is just the latest, latest indicator of that. Let's try and do this in chronological order. The Premier League race continues to be phenomenal, and I'm not talking about the top four, which looks like Aston Villa might have the staying power. The standings with the top three. Let's go to Aston Villa. They're 5 points clear of Spurs. Spurs have a shot and they have a game in hand, so they could catch up. Man United are done. They're not going to finish in the top four. They hit a bad patch. West Ham United in seventh place. Unbelievable. You know, everyone's sitting there. You know, I speak to my friends about it, and the Premier League is so good this year, and it's kicking everyone's tail. And look, I watch the Serie A to see our guys, Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie. I'm not going to sit here and say it's wonderful viewing. I catch myself very fatigued watching Italian football. It's not great. La Liga outside of Real Madrid and Barcelona, who are recuperating, it's not great. It's not this pulsating. Premier League, everything has stakes. Everything is got a really good arc of a story. And that's in a year where there really isn't much of a relegation competition. It looks like the three teams that came up are going to go right back down, which was what was predicted here on the Soccer OG. Sheffield United, Burnley, and Luton Town. Despite Luton Town's best efforts, I'd love for them to stick around, but it just doesn't appear like it's going to happen. And this competition for fourth place is red hot. The Aston Villa, everyone knew that a big club in Birmingham, which is, you know, was it the second city of England, you need one. And there's Aston Villa, and they're just going to get better. And they're going to, who knows what's going to happen with their squad, their roster. It's going to get huge. A Tottenham Hotspur is, I've passed all these teams with wealth, you know, with that incredible venue. They're just raking in money, more than Chelsea. You know, Chelsea's handcuffed. Tottenham Hotspur is liberated. So all across the Premier League, it is excellent. But their excellence might be an issue. So the race was, Liverpool won their game, last gasp, 99th minute there, Nottingham Forest, some controversy attached. Man City won their game. They're right on the heels. Not right on the heels. They won the Manchester Derby. They're a point back, so they are on the heels. And then Arsenal won their game on a Monday. They're in third place, a point back of City, 2 points back of Liverpool. Arsenal beat Sheffield United 6-0. It was 3-0 after 15 minutes, 4-0 after 25. After the third goal, fans started to exit Bramall Lane. You just never seen that. But I mentioned this because the cost, you know, of promotion relegation, generally it is all great. We all paint this picture of how wonderful is this, hope springs eternal. If it's springing fans leaving 16 minutes into the game, then yeah, whoa. So I say this because I think this might be the norm. The teams that come up into the Premier League are going to run into a buzzsaw. The standard is so high from teams 1 through 5, from teams 5 through 10, from teams 11 through 14. It is so high that if you're a new team and say you're, you know, Leicester City might be an outlier as they have a Premier League background, and they could get a Premier League roster. But, you know, a team like Ipswich, say they came up, can they get points off anyone in the top 10? They are so handcuffed coming up, trying to build together a roster that can compete in that league. Truly unbelievable. So it's great drama. But I mean, the promoted clubs are going to have a nightmare. Not only transferring their team from a championship level club up to a Premier League side. Really, really excited. We'll be back in Austin this weekend for Austin FC St. Louis City. If you get a chance to go to Q2, it's absolutely delightful. I was in Austin for week one, Salt Lake week two, and Austin. Salt Lake, I don't know what the perception is out there. I think people think this the Church of Latter-day Saints is there and they make life impossible. That's not the case anymore. It's really unbelievable. Brand new airport. And if you like the winter sports, there's mountains everywhere. Downtown's got really nice dining. It's getting a little more livelier, and that's only improving. Salt Lake's, if I shouldn't say anything, and we'll talk about it with Brian Dunseth and Check Complete, but it has got a lot going for it. Certainly, we all know that Austin does. We'll go over there. I'm also going to talk to Dunseth about the Lionel Messi. Remember the Lionel Messi preseason? No, I don't remember it either. Remember what I told you? we won't be talking about it. Because everyone was up in arms. They said, oh, the injuries. Oh, the no-shows. Oh, the results. Well, look at Inter Miami. This is why we don't pay attention to preseason, okay? Okay. So this was another sham that we all dealt with, where people were going, I am outraged. How could they do this? Well, Inter Miami did a preseason tour. It went well, with the exception of Hong Kong. And they're doing just fine now. So the means to an end. Lot to look forward to. I want to talk about the U.S. men's national team. So let's get in. We had a great conversation with Brian Charette of American Soccer Now. We're trying to piece together the 23 players for the Nations League, which is going to be announced now. Sit around for the conversation. Come back. We'll confer amongst ourselves. And then check complete after that with Brian Dunseth. Business End is next. We are back on the business end, and we're getting really close to the announcement of the Nations League rosters. Everyone's waiting with bated breath, so we're trying to get all the intel possible here. And to help me with that is a man who's been on the podcast before, Brian Charette, who was with America Soccer Now. And we got Brian, I think we have to roll up our sleeves, and there's a lot at play here, not just for that roster, but again, setting the table for the rest of 2024.
Yeah, indeed. You know, it's this and then the Olympic team. They'll merge the player pools after the summer. But yeah, it's an interesting pool. I think there's some positions are more set than others. And, you know, I think it's like there's definitely a lot to unpack and talk about. And there's some absences that might disappoint people and some that people might find reasonable. And but overall, I think, you know, if you and I were to give our best guess of it, we'd probably get 90 to 95% of the roster right.
I think so. And I, you know, there's those one things about is there going to be a third forward? Can one of those forwards play out wide? How many fullbacks do you bring in because of the Serginho Dest suspension in the first game? Very interesting, but there's one, I think Gio Reyna, and there is some reports that he may be going to be on the Olympic roster, which would take him out of the Nations League roster, because as you pointed out to me, Greg Berhalter has said you have the Nations League moving to the Copa and then the Olympics roster, and those are going to be two unique,
very different teams. Yeah,
two different teams, and they will kind of come together on the back end of the summer of 2024. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's historically how it's been done, and I think it'll be done in terms of, you know, providing a lot more competition to the player pool that's needed. You know, there's some players that are mainstay call-ups, but they're just, you know, it's a little bit of a stagnant pool. So, you know, there's not much changes, but I'd be very surprised to see Gio on the Olympic roster. I think it's just, you don't even know what club he's at. And the big thing with the Olympics, obviously, is releases are non-mandatory. So you don't even know what club you're dealing with at this point with Gio, you know? Yeah. So
that's a good point. Well, I don't think so.
Who do you call to start talking with his coach for the fall, you know?
And I don't think so. And I said reports. They're not reports. Maybe they're just some sort of opinions.
Speculation. It's fun. Speculation. I mean, and I get why he would be on the list. You know, that roster's small. It's only 18 people. They might expand it like they did, but closer to the tournament. But as of now, it's 18 people and three overagers. So it's, it's a small team, but you know, a good team, and I think one that definitely could provide some national team competition in some key areas. So, again, like I think I'm more interested with this Nation League in terms of the strikers. I'm sure, a lot of people are, some of the reserve wingers. I think the central, you know, I think a lot of the other positions, you know, we have a good idea of, maybe not who starts in every episode, every game, but, you know, in terms of who will be there, you know, these rosters do kind of pick themselves.
Well, I would agree. I think there's going to be a couple positions where people have some strife, but even the last few rosters for Greg Berhalter, I think were pretty straightforward, and most people would agree with the guys that have been on there. I did want to ask you about Gio, because there was a quote that came out from Greg Berhalter, who, let me pull this up. He goes, "We know Gio is a creative player. We know he's a great player for the final pass. We have to see what he can do in terms of workload, how long he could last in the field, because he hasn't been playing, but we'll also see other options as well." So let me break that down. I think Gio should start to maybe a week ago, I was saying I think he should start because of what he did in October and in the previous camp, even going back to the last Nations League where he showed he was a critical player where you put him in ink. Now, hearing Greg Berhalter say that gives me pause. I think Greg Berhalter wants to play him, but at some point, you know, we could say you don't have to be starting, but even Gio may not be training. He didn't play the last game for Nottingham.
No.
What kind of shape? I don't think he's definitely not a 90-minute player.
Well, Max, listen, he's going to finish this year with all likelihood. This is going to be his third straight year where he doesn't even hit 1,000 minutes. Oof. All right? No person, no national team coach, I don't care if it's Greg or they have Pep Guardiola, no one's going to commit to starting someone who doesn't exhibit that kind of workload. You know, it was one thing to do it for a friendly when you get six substitutions and you can kind of manage everything and everything's toned down. But, you know, in games you have to win that are competitive, you know, if you start them, you're looking at like, okay, well, then now we're locked into a substitution in the 60th minute. You know, you may or may not want to do that. And then, look, it's a competitive thing, right? He's not just the guys he's competing against for minutes aren't nobodies either. Like, I mean, Malik Tillman's out there doing it every week, and that's probably his toughest competition. You know, Musa's not. You know, that's another one where you might want to say, okay, like, can he start and go 90 minutes both games coming up? I mean, he didn't play the last game just as a coach's choice. You know, and you know, obviously Cardozo's in a much better spot. You know, there's all kinds of, and we'll see what Weston's back training. You know, and he's in good shape. But like, there's always these questions. You can't really, you know, why on earth would you want to be saying like we have to start this player, you know, when he's not starting this much? It's like, I don't, and especially for CONCACAF games too. The U.S. shouldn't feel this much pressure to have to start Gio. And I think it'd be wrong if Gio expects to be a starter, just walk right into the starting lineup. You know,
where's my gig? I know what you're saying.
I mean,
I think he would be timid at this point. Without
I don't think any coach, you know, look, maybe he goes into training. He comes in the first couple of days and kills it. And then they give him, you know, physical tests. He passes him on flying colors. Okay, then you start him. But like, that's not stuff. So you can't really say this like like several weeks out before camp even starts. It's just not that. You just have to be a little bit of reality check is needed to understand like just how little he's played in over, you know, now for his third season.
I think with Malik Tillman, you certainly have a guy who could slot in there who has been playing very well. And that makes sense now. I would have put Gio Reyna into that starting position if he had, even if he played 15, 20 minutes and I knew he was training, but now he's not playing games and now he's not making benches because of an injury that's kind of kept him out. And then I'm like, this seems like a big headache, and maybe a way to get one less headache is to put Malik Tillman, or you can figure something around Weston McKennie, who you said is back from his dislocated shoulder.
Gio's going to be on the team. He's going to play. But you know, like, again, it's like there aren't many people on the national team that you say you have to start. Like, you know, Anthony Robinson's one and stuff like that. But like, and Christian Pulisic, obviously, and you know, but like, aside from that, you know, everyone has to kind of earn it. And Gio's not at that Pulisic, Anthony Robinson level where like you just say, okay, he's here, he's going to start.
Tim Weah is going to make this roster, correct? Even though it's been startling over the last few weeks how his role has diminished a bit. But I mean, he seems like, I mean, he is a lock starter. He's like one of five guys you lock in as a starter. But then, I don't think that changes, but it's some consideration here for Greg Berhalter, not only if someone else plays for Weah, but how do you bring in the additional wingers or forwards to this 23-man roster?
Look, I mean, you could start a midfield, right, of Musa, McKennie, Cardozo. You could have Tillman then out wide. Then you could put, you know, because you don't have Dest that first game, Weah could play right back. It kind of solves a little, it wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, because Joe Scally's not playing right now. And, you know, there's that problem there because Stefan Leiner's now healthy at Mönchengladbach. He was the guy who had cancer. I think it was Scally started a lot more in the first half of the season because of that. And you know, thank God he's Liner's okay. But, you know, it's like, are the minutes going to be there for him? And, you know, it's so, you know, a lot of these guys are sometimes in the, and that's okay, because these guys are, you know, like, these are, like I said, these guys are at big clubs. But, you know, I said, like, you know, what happens if they want to put, you know, I think, I always think in long term they're going to try to do the three in the back and then with wing backs, you know, and then that would
be, oh really, you think that's really as a more permanent look, or just for horses?
Yeah, at some point Greg's going to want to do that. Now maybe it's after the Copa America when you're just looking at a lot of friendlies coming up for the next 2 years. That's a good time. But like Wea is just versatile. He starts for this team, but you know, again, it might not be, he might not be the, like, if Scally's not playing, he might not be the bad backup for Dest at right back. You know, and that could then push pressure on Scally. And then, you know, Tillman could play wing or he could move in centrally. So there's a couple of these, there's a lot of different ways he could play it. I don't think he's short on options the way some people do.
Well, the fullback situation is really interesting because of the Serginho Dest situation. So you have Anthony Robinson at left back, and who you play at right back. Tim Weah seems like a great option. Let me obviously Dest is going to be there. So those, let's just say, let's not include Weah in that. So you do have Dest, you do have Anthony Robinson, and Joe Scally, even though he's not playing as much lately, is going to likely be there. How many fullbacks do you bring in without Tim Weah, and then we'll bring him into the equation? Is it four? Is it?
Yeah, I think you have your, you know, your usual, you know, fullback situation with Robinson, and then, you know, Lund. I think Lund is a guy who, you know, might get pushed, you know, might have some competition after the Olympics. There's some really good left backs on the younger side. You know, right back, I think they could just bring, they'll bring Dest. He won't play the first game. And then Scally, and then backing up Scally, then you can just always shift Weah back there. I don't think there's anything more. I don't think, you know, look, it's a 26 player roster. It's a 23 player roster. It's not 26 like there was at the World Cup. So, you know, I don't think you need to go too far beyond there.
So Dest, Scally, Robinson, and then Weah as your fourth. Maybe Lund gets in there. What about like a guy like DeJuan Jones who can play both, maybe on the outside?
Yeah, DeJuan's an interesting guy. I think it's certainly one that, you know, he could. Yeah, I think what they like with, and he could push Lund too. The problem with Jones is he's a right-footed guy who plays mostly as a left back for New England. And, you know, and I think Greg really wants the left-footed guys on the left side, you know, and the right-footed guys on the right side. I mean, I think it doesn't, you can kind of see, even though Dest plays left back sometimes for PSV, he's, for the national team, he really doesn't play that well as a left back. He's, you know, he's so much better on the right. So I think, you know, look, eventually, I think after the Olympics, you have Caleb Wiley and John Tolkien, Jonathan Gomez, like a lot of good left backs. I think that competition opens up later in the year. You know, although Lund could maybe go down to the Olympic team, and then that maybe opens up the door for DeJuan Jones. It comes down to just how much Greg is willing to sacrifice, you know, the left-footed thing on the left side. But again, Robinson's just a 90-minute, like, guy.
What a gift.
You know, his good performances this year. For me, he was the best soccer player of the year. I had him in my. I mean, his good performances are like clockwork. You can like. I mean, but what a, I
what
do
a,
like.
What a high praise that is, Brian, to say that. Yeah. It's just so consistent.
The thing with Lund is it's just like he passes well. He's good mechanics, but like you go from such a different player with Robinson at left back. He's just a. I mean, not only has his passing gotten better, but he's just the how well he covers that end line endlessly, and the work rate is unbelievable. And then you kind of shift back to a completely different fullback with Lund. Jones, while the head doesn't have that left foot, at least he covers that sideline that offers more of a like for things, you know, replacement. So you don't have a vast drastic stylistic difference, if that makes any sense.
It does, but you don't want to
have to change the way you play because you lose your starter,
right? And it's fascinating, these fine margins as to what could get a guy into the starting 11 or into the roster. just the way you use your feet, whatever it might be. So I was going to have DeJuan Jones in there, but I'm a little reluctant. I was just really I think the Weah angle is very interesting to be that fourth guy and clear one less headache selection wise for Berhalter.
I think Jones has played pretty well. I mean, so far to start the season, Lunda, you know, hasn't been that great lately over at Palermo. They've lost a lot of their promotion momentum. So, you know, and Lunda has the avenue with the Olympic eligibility too. You know, so if somehow I saw him on the U23 roster and Jones there, I wouldn't be surprised. Sometimes you might want to go where you can play as opposed to just being a, you know, you have your backups and maybe you don't want to. Yeah, you know, maybe if your backups can play at a U23 level, that's a better place for them. So I don't know. There's a lot of different ways they know who their starter is. It's just managing backups when you have youth national teams and eligibility for the backups is sometimes a tricky question.
Let's go to fullback to center back. This to me is the most interesting one. Yeah. Maybe I'm overselling it because Chris Richards playing regularly at Crystal Palace, playing well, scored a goal. He is the guy that we want to develop to hopefully be this modern center back that we never really see that frequently. I don't know if he's there. I don't know if he'll get there, but he's the best we got. And I think Richards and Ream not only not playing for Fulham, he's like, but being his age, you figure if he's finally hitting that wall, which is going to hit. I think Ream, I would say Ream Richards is a starter, but I'm not 100% on Ream. Whereas you need to start finding, at maybe not for the Nations League, but eventually someone who can fill in there. The options, I think there's two. There's Cameron Carter-Vickers. There is Miles Robinson. And, you know, as you can imagine, I talk about Miles Robinson. I think he's the guy because he's done well with the national team. He passes relatively well, not in Reims League. But I guess a lot of people wonder if he can make the roster, and I know we're forgetting some other people here that could certainly play.
Yeah, McKenzie, Trusty.
It's on that 60 as well. Trusty,
Zimmerman.
Man, Trusty had a harsh. I mean, it was Arsenal. Yeah.
But I don't think Trusty's. I don't think I know he's ready. Plays in the Premier League. I'd be surprised if he's on that. If he's on the roster, I mean, I think Ream is going to be there because
how many center backs do you think get brought in?
Four.
Okay.
I think Richards, if I'm guessing, I think Richards and Miles start. I think Miles still covers ground that I think you want, particularly in a CONCACAF game. Those games can get a little open and you need some emergency defending and you need some quicker play. Miles' record against Mexico is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's I don't know. The only drawback with him, and you know it is that people say he plays in MLS. I go, but everything else, he was a little spotty in 2022 when he was playing. You could see he didn't play the way he did in the Gold Cup year in Vegas. But there's enough of a body of work.
If you're in MLS and you're best 11, I mean, you know, a league best 11 at the very top of these positions. I mean, you know, versus you take some fictitious guy like a go ahead Eagles, you know, it's like I'm taking Miles, you know, it's
right.
I like Carter Vickers too,
but he's been injured and then, you know,
he's been in and out. You know, I don't think, Celtic is, you know, I can't believe they dropped the loss to Hearts the other day. I think with Vickers, I think Miles has a little bit more quickness that Greg has always been drawn to.
Yes.
I wrote about this. I did a big feature about the center back pool, and it's been a horror show at the youth national team level because I follow it there. And because you haven't been pushing enough center backs at youth national team levels the last 5 years now into the senior team pool, you see the Olympic pool, it's a disaster. They have to use two overagers in center back. They have like no alternative. It's just been like the same. National team's been like the same six, seven guys, just kind of always in the pool. No one's really excelling. Someone has a good couple months and then they fade off. And it's no one has really taken the ball. Maybe Richards is now. We'll see. But yeah, I don't see, Ream is been great. He's aged better than any other player, but you always have to know where the exit doors are.
Yeah. He saved us at the World Cup. Remember that no one had him on the roster until a few months earlier and he saved us. But we all wait for it because Father Time, as they say,
he's undefeated. I think he's also a good guy.
He's a good guy overall, but good guy in the locker room. Great to have. Oh, as your
he's
coach.
Fantastic. You know, so I think with him, it's like if you bring him in and he's not starting, he's not gonna bring the rest of the team down. Yeah, look, there's always options out there. Like, is he going to bring John Brooks back in? And I don't see it.
But you know what? You saying that the revival for Tim Ream is there's a precedent there that maybe there could be a revival for a guy like John Brooks under when there's a need. When there's a need,
there might be a need. You know, and I think that they're going to want to explore what they have right now. And I don't think Brooks is the kind of guy you bring unless you're going to start him. I think if you have him, bring him in, put him on the bench, it's might not be optimal. So, you know, like I think, you know, Vickers will make it, Richards, Robinson,
and Ream.
And then I think Walker is putting himself in a good position to be the an overage guy for the Olympics. Yeah. And a guy I think is still in the mix very much is Mark McKenzie.
I hope so.
Season. Yeah, you know, it's an up and down season. You know, he's kind of, you know, I don't think anyone at Genk has had the season that they want, but, you know, he's pushing up for bigger and better. Maybe he's another guy you think of as an overage guy for the Olympics. They have to use two of them.
But there's some alarm bells in what you said about the lack of players getting opportunities at center back, because to me, the identity of when the U.S. have been successful, and you go back to the World Cup where they didn't give up goals, and you go back to the Gold Cup Nations League, the Nations League final with Mexico, probably an aberration, but, you know, getting a goal and that might be enough. Being a team that's tough to beat. So good goalkeeping, good defending. Obviously, goalkeeping's not as steadfast as it was a year ago. Now, we don't know who the two or the three are going to be. We know the one, and the one's not playing. And then what you said about the center back, I mean, that could be pretty alarming.
You want to hear an alarming stat? If you look at the U23 eligible, which is 2001 born and younger, there are – and you look at how many guys are playing regularly at their clubs, and you include MLS, any first division in Europe – or the top second divisions that are under like the big four leagues over there. And there's three guys playing regularly. So you got
no Jalen one's been Neal talking about this.
Jalen Neal, who's hurt, George Campbell in Montreal, and Maximilian Dietz at Gertha Firth in the second division, second Bundesliga. That's the extent of the U23 center back pool that plays regular. And that's a result because of they haven't been good in a number of years in center back. You know, so it's that's why it's been very stagnant on the men's national team. Like, there's no one really new entering in the pool. It's the same people we talk about window after window. No new face has been talked about in center back for a very long time. I mean, they tried to do Jalen Neal, but last year was only his first year, and he played something like 1,200 minutes before he got hurt in MLS with the Galaxy. So, yeah, I mean, it's he's promising, but I mean, it's 1,200 minutes is not a national team player career minutes. So it's a big cause of concern. I think they're okay for the short term future, but long term they need people playing center back, and it's actually really something people need to think about.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, I like our chances when we're winning 1-0 as opposed to 3-2. Those are hard games to win. I don't know if we have the goals. I'd like to think so. And that said, I mean, there's a good segue there. It's like, maybe we have to outscore people. So we look
at, I know where we're going.
this has got to be pretty interesting. Again, who makes the roster? And it's a big one because 23 man roster, they're going to bring two strikers, could bring in three, but then that would take away from the two wingers that you would bring. So four wingers total.
Yeah. I think, you know, with 23 people, you bring two at every position, total plus three goalies. You know, that's usually how you do it.
But forwards and wingers, you're probably bringing in six guys total as a group.
Yeah, between forwards and wingers, because you have a front three and you want to bring at least two of them. So,
okay.
That's correct.
Now, the one thing that has come up,
you got a couple hybrid guys like Tillman who could play as a 10 or a wing, you know.
That's Malik Tillman again. It's like you talk about Anthony Robinson being a gift. Malik Tillman could be a gift. Tim Weah to a lesser degree because he's not having to go club season. But that versatility just opens up a lot of doors. So I think if Pulisic and Weah are still the guys, we'll keep Weah in there for argument's sake. He's been such a great performer for the national team. Then you have Balogun and Pepe. We'll maybe talk to see who you think could get the inside track as the starter. I'm a Balogun guy. I'll still be until I see proof that we can't go that direction. Then Sargent, who's been phenomenal. And then Haji Wright, who has scored. You can't bring both of them, I think. But the belief is maybe you can bring one as a wide player, which they both are comfortable. So how do you see?
I'd take Vasquez over Ohaji, to be honest with you.
That's another one, and he's tearing it up.
Right.
And he's a different
And we don't even think about a guy like Jordan Pefok anymore. You know, it's
I wish some of these guys could play center back, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think if you're talking pure form, right? Like, you know, I mean, Sargent and Vasquez are the best informed guys. My opinion is that Vasquez is going to be thought of as this is just a guess on my part, no inside info, but I think Vasquez checks a lot of boxes to be an overage guy for the Olympics. They don't miss any Liga MX games because it overlaps completely with the League's Cup. And in terms of Sargent, the way I understand it is as well as he's played, and he's played extremely well, he's playing hurt. Like, his ankle is still bothering him. He's playing through pain. And David Wagner kind of hinted at this last week in a press conference when he said, like, they're hoping to get to the international break when he can have some needed rest, you know, because he's really straining himself on his ankle. You know, and look, I think Sargent deserves to be on this roster in March. And then he deserves to be on the Copa America if he keeps it up. But if the reason to leave Sargent off is because his ankle needs rest and they're trying to push for promotion because they are a promotion contending team now in Norwich. And if not, then they're going to be certainly next year if they can get a full season out of them. Because that's the reason why they'd be almost automatically promoted if Sargent was healthy this whole year. So, you know, if that's the reason why he's left off, I think everyone should be cool with that. Because it's They won't be. But
there will be an uproar, you know? Even if Greg says this is why.
The people I've muted on Twitter will be vastly disappointed by Sargent's absence. But
look,
that being said,
those are really good reasons, Brian. Norwich is going to look at Greg and say, we need this guy. We're trying to get in that top six.
Two managers who both played for the U.S. national team will be like, look, if you want to take him to the Copa, Wagner will be like, if you want to take him to the Copa America, go for it. But we're trying to get promoted here. And Josh is our best player. They've even said he's their best player right now. And like his ankle's not great. So why would you want to put him out there in a US Mexico game when you're with a guy trying to get through like a surgery in the middle of the season? I don't know. I think it's going to be Balogun and Pepe. I think, I don't think, unless they see Haji as a guy who can go out wide, I don't think he fits really the winger that they want. Maybe I could be wrong, but like,
so no Sargent, no Haji.
I think Haji's just, I don't think he's going to be in line for many call ups if everyone's healthy. You know,
yeah.
I just put it that
way. It's just the numbers game. So you get two traditional wingers. Could we say a guy like Kevin Paredes makes it? Or
yeah, Kevin's a guy who's you know, he's in and out of the lineup at Wolfsburg. I mean, he already had one or two goals this year, a couple of assists, which aren't great numbers, but he's very promising. Again, he's Olympic eligible, but, you know, but will Wolfsburg cooperate in the Olympics, you know, next year? Maybe not. So then you just figure, okay. Yeah, Paredes is certainly one I think that they could use out wide. Tillman's a guy, Gio are guys who can cover out wide. You know, behind the Wea and the pool of six starters, you know, the black of wingers aren't great, but you know, look, you know, and then who knows, you know, maybe there is a surprise pick in there somehow. But again, that backup winger positions are things you can really see change after the Olympics.
Right.
Same thing with the backup
fullbacks. Well, let's go after. So if I'm clear, we have Balogun, Pepe, Pulisic, Wea. Four. So we're getting the backups. Sargent, for those reasons, is not going to make it. Haji Wright might get caught in the shuffle. Brandon Vasquez, Olympics. So maybe let's say Paredes, and then there's one more position. Was it Zendejas? Or I mean, Taylor Booth
Zendejas back, right? Has been doing well. I mean, he's a guy that's known guys like Pulisic for, you know, they were in residency together. You know, there's so many guys like that. Like, it could be Paredes and Zendejas. You know, those are kind of like makeshift guys until some of the younger guys grow up a little bit, you know.
And that's a promising group on the horizon, these kids that are.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, you start looking at the Olympic. That's the funny thing is like the 10 and the wide positions are loaded at the Olympics. That's when you start looking at guys like Luna and Gutierrez and Taylor Booth and Paredes. And you could just keep going on and on. Bernard Camungo, who's great. And Edmund Bartarvich.
Love him.
is one of the best teenagers in America. He's maybe one of the best teenagers right now.
Yeah, and Espier's been great because he's they're playing him every game. I love an MLS because
they
MLS,
love him, and his left foot is sublime. You know, he grew up like really in you know, with a guy with a father. You know, they escaped the Yugoslavian civil war. You know, fled to Wisconsin of all places, and he just blossomed as a player. Yeah, I mean, and he'll be sold eventually before too long. But I mean, he's playing on the Olympic team up a cycle. I think he's like on a fast track as long as he doesn't go to Bosnia. So like, again, you know, those are guys that they're ways out there. But you know, if you start thinking about how this thing is going to change once these youth cycles run out with the national team and then they all have to kind of merge. Yeah, I mean, there are going to be options moving forward. That's the strength of the Olympic team. So, you know, I think I think they'll ride with like the known backups right now and the known team for the Nations League. And then look, after the Copa America, remember, you're just dealing with friendlies for 2 years after the Olympics, leading up to the World
Cup
and a Gold Cup and another Nations League. That's when you're going to be able to experiment a lot more with some of these younger guys.
Real quickly, we said Esmir Bajrakterovic, he potentially could be going to, you said Bosnia, as a Bosnian international player.
Their U21 coach has been talking about him publicly. Oh,
of course, absolutely. So, I mean, that's a great.
But the U.S. has given him a lot of opportunities. He's been capped. He's been a big part of the Olympic team. Marko Mitrovic, the U.S. Olympic coach, is Serbian. And Esmir has talked about how he's able to kind of relate with him. And then he's going to be at the U20 World Cup, and you know, it's just, there's just a lot there to him. Yeah. But yeah, he's, I credit to the,
well, we've had a great chance. The ones who have been dual nationals, the men's national teams had a great job of recruiting those guys on,
the ones that they really want. Yeah, for yes. Sure. I mean, Noel Buck looks like he wants out, but you know, they're getting their pick of the litter, which is good.
Yeah. And like, what's great about, I mentioned MLS is, you know, the Revs are playing Esmir and Real Salt Lake's been playing Diego Luna nonstop since the back end of last season. Yeah. So if these kids can play, and that's one of the benefits of MLS, if these kids can play, they will get in there.
And look at necessity for these clubs. Like Camungo, yes. Camungo, I don't know how to rate, and I follow young players, but like, here's a guy who played like, and he was born on a refugee camp, and he played with like makeshift soccer balls of like, and then it really wasn't until he got to the United States as a teenager for high school that he got to play organized soccer. So it's like, and now he's like a top player. He's a really good player for Dallas, and he's on the U23 team. But like, how do you rate a guy who didn't really grow up playing the game properly because of the circumstances? It's just, it's funny. But again, I think they're getting the opportunities to play. I think the league really changed, MLS changed for the better. They started introducing the academies, you know, in 2009 and through. And then really, I guess, when that Tyler Adams, first you had Yedlin and Miazga, then you had the Adams, Tyler Adams and Alfonso Davies group kind of coming in. And then from there, you know, it's just been a steady flow. You had Brendan Aaronson, Mark McKenzie, just like there's always been a steady flow of young players playing. It wasn't really that way. That steady flow really didn't start till like 16, 17. So that's really when I kind of consider the modern era of the league happening. And it's been a lot more friendly with selling players, developing players, playing them. It's been really beneficial for a lot of teams and the league and national team and other national teams too.
I think we've been able to piece together a pretty decent roster, Brian. And to the listeners, this is why I bring Brian. He very level-headed and approach with this and not picking favorites, just being commonsensical in many ways on why these pieces fit into place. I know you said you're going to be at the Paris Olympics and
I'm going to be there covering my first Olympic games. It's going to be great. I like the team. I like the team, the direction the team is heading in. And, you know, I like Marco as a coach. I think he's done a good job so far. So look, they play France, this window coming up and they're going to learn their draw too. So, and I think that this team is going to have some players who people aren't talking about in the scope of the national team, but they're going to be pushing players in the existing pool in the years ahead, which is what you need to say. You always need people pushing.
Hey, Brian, I always poo-poo the Olympics. I go, oh, I don't watch it because I don't. I mean, sometimes we're going to have to watch the Copa America, the Euros, and so much more. And I go, I know the Olympics, other than USA games, are going to slip through the cracks for me. But that is enough reason to tune in for that reason, because this is a tournament we haven't been able to lean in. And as I was talking to you off air, where Greg Berhalter can build two unique groups and then merge them at the end to get the best possible team, that is a luxury we sorely missed and we really could use.
I mean, if you go back and you look at like 2000, you had John O'Brien, Josh Wolf, and Landon Donovan, and then look at where they were 2 years later. And then in 2008, even though I said that team played well, even though they didn't get out of the group stage, it was a dumb error by Roscoe Fiscal, cost it. But like, look, you had Adu and Fjellhaber and Davies and Holden and Kleschen, Altidore, Bradley. I mean, it was a team that really then had a lot of players then push into the national team for the Confederations Cup and then the World Cup. It's a really important tool because it fills that gap between the U20s and the full national team very well. Gives them everyone another serious tournament to prepare for and get used to those. You know, these international games are just different. So, yeah, look, I think it's a good team, you know, and I think there's some players to watch. And, you know, and look, Kylian Mbappe is going to put it in his contract wherever he signs that he gets released for the Olympics. So he's going
to
play.
So another reason to watch. Like,
yeah, I mean, Neymar
did it in 2016. It's big for these athletes, you can tell. You know,
oh, yeah.
Especially Argentine and Brazilian and Mexican athletes in the past, they want to be on this. It's a lifetime experience.
Oh, yeah. And with France hosting it, their players want to be part of it. And I think Ligue 1 teams will cooperate, you know, to send France a good team there. So it's going to be a big tournament.
All right. Well, not too much Beaujolais over there, okay, Brian? When you're over there, it's...
yeah.
Brian Sciuretta of America Soccer Now joining us here on the Soccer OG, giving you some insight as to how this roster will be put together. And we can imagine, I think they said, was it March 11th or 12th when they're going to probably announce it? I don't know if you had.
Yeah, it's probably around then when it'll be due, and they'll probably release it soon after. So we'll hear about it.
We'll get to know it. Hey, Brian, appreciate you joining me, man. This was always
anytime,
really informative.
It's been too long, man. Anytime you want me on, just let me know, man.
Oh, man, we're going to ramp it up, man. There's a lot to talk about. So we'll bring Brian back again soon. I'll be back here. He's in and out of the business end. We'll be back with Check Complete. Brian Dunseth will join me, another Brian, as we'll talk about the game in Real Salt Lake and the snowstorm that went through. This is the Soccer OG. We are back now. Time now for Check Complete, which is looking a little different. I usually sound off on a topic, and I'll get back to that at some point. But we're having some guests here. And Brian Dunseth and I shared a unique experience and figured we'd get in and talk about it. And that was what happened with the snow. Dunny, I'll start with this. So I was at LAFC training, and I spoke to Kike Oliveira and David Martinez. I'm not name-dropping here. I'm just saying because I wanted to talk to them. And Omar Campos. And at least those three guys said they have never seen snow before. And their first experience with that stuff is playing in what, a foot and a half of it over 2 hours?
Yeah, listen, Maxie, I was joking around with Tom Rennie today as we do our Week in the Tackle podcast. And he was like, oh, you're so much tougher than us Europeans and doing all the big jokes. And I go, dude, no joke. Like somewhere between, well, like Messi games, like Inter Miami games are going to be off the charts, right? Like 2.5 million views per video. But Real Salt Lake against LAFC, like right now, as of right now, as we record this, is like 225,000 views. I mean, like you and I were joking. Well, I mean, we were joking, but it's kind of like a little bit of reality. We talked to El Tree, Matt Crooks, Crooksy, who made his debut for Real Salt Lake after coming over from Middlesbrough. And we were kind of like, you know, you're from Manchester. You played at Glasgow Rangers. Like, you played in sleet. You played in slow. And he's just like, couldn't see my boots. Couldn't see my boots. He goes, couldn't see Diego Luna's legs.
That's so good. A new player to take a dig.
It was amazing. So, you know, listen, I said this during the broadcast. Imagine for David Martinez, when someone says to him, what was your MLS debut like? He's going to be like, Do I have a story to tell you? In Spanish, obviously.
Yes.
But it's going to be, listen, at the end of the day, less than ideal conditions. You and I, whether we're talking about wind and safety concerns for the fans, whether we're talking about the snowstorm and the subsequent lightning that happened within 8 miles of the stadium, to where the field was pretty playable for the first 45 minutes. And then obviously circumstances, things were not ideal for LAFC after that first 45. Listen, at the end of the day, it's going to be a data point. What I would say from a Real Salt Lake perspective, it's a huge 3 points against a team that has had their number historically forever. For LAFC, probably one of their worst 45-minute performances, and yet I thought in the second half showed monster mentality to compete and had Denny Bouanga's shot maybe, what, 3 or 4 minutes in the second half not hit the post. Maybe we're talking about something completely different.
Yeah, and that's – you know, I talked to some of the coaches there, and they go, we want to forget about it. And I go, look, for you guys to have that half – and then waddle out for that second half when you know nobody wants to go back out there. Nobody wants to go out. And you did, and you were able to put a decent performance. I think that's going to have a residual effect. You may not be able to see it, but the fact you said, look, I went through that, and we responded. You know, could have said, we're not going back out there. It's too – they did, and they – and I think there's a really nice lesson in all of that. But also to your point about – posterity and saying, hey, look at this. This is my first game, and carrying on. And it's going to be pretty visually stunning. Look, I thought the game should have gone. Maybe should have been stopped somewhere in the second half when it was accumulating. Yeah, probably. And I would imagine the folks there never thought in a million years that it would get as bad as it did. Because we see a little snow coming in, and then all of a sudden, as you said, you can't really predict the weather out there.
Yeah.
And it was, wow. The skies emptied.
Yeah, once it comes over the Oakers, hits the valley, and heads into the Wasatch Front.
You sound like John Denver right now. Once it come over the Oakers and down the valley, get out of here.
Come home. it's by the way, just for clarity's sake, it's not the first, nor will it be the last time I've been a part of a Real Salt Lake broadcast where snow has fallen.
Or a raccoon is falling.
Or raccoon on the pizza. It was on the pizza, in fact. But yeah, I think I saw a stat line that Real Salt Lake provided. When the orange ball has come out in the entirety of their existence since 2005, they are 6 wins, 1 loss, 0 draws. So it's something that they're used to. And again, we talk about home field advantage. You know, there's a bunch of little nuances that come into play in Major League Soccer. And one of the home field advantages is altitude at Real Salt Lake. And for those that don't really understand what the altitude does in terms of comparing and contrasting with Denver, Denver obviously Mile High. Real Salt Lake comes in just a little bit under Mile High. So you kind of understand with that altitude, there's a bunch of funky things that can happen. And we kind of joke around out here. You like the weather? Wait 30 minutes. And that's exactly what we got on Saturday.
Well, I want to say this because people were asking me about the game, and they said, what was it like? I go, well, it was cold, but it was cold because of the wind and the snow. The actual temperature wasn't that cold. Yeah. And I also said, I go, I got to take my hat off. And you said this to me. I go, you will be blown away how the folks in Utah deal with snow. The roads were clear. I was in Salt Lake at the hotel. There was no snow anywhere. They got rid of it. And these big old roads, the 80 where you can get up to Park City.
Yeah.
It's like 8 lanes and it's clear. I mean, it's not clear, but because I'm used to heading up here in California, that one lane up to Big Bear, and you're taking your life into your hands. They won't let you up there. They won't even let you up there. You're not going to come back down the mountain. So yeah. Look, I'm on board with the Salt Lake Tourism or the Utah Tourism Bureau. Maybe I shouldn't be because I go there enough, so I keep quiet so millions of tourists don't inundate
it. Shut up, Max.
Shut up.
Max, don't say anything. Shut up.
Jeez, man, it's a show for kids, dude. But it's even the airport and the proximity. You go, everything's an hour. I was like, man, this is a – Utah's pretty legit. We just got to stop measuring the whiskeys and then we'll be perfect.
This place is terrible. Don't tell anybody. We'll keep it.
But everyone, every time I tell people going to Utah, they go, oh, you're going to Utah. I go, yeah, man, this is great. Yeah. Great food. Great dining options. Ask my son. He went with me. He was eating like a champion. We had really good Mexican fare and Italian food. So and by the way, all the cranes, so they're building. So the secret's out, I'm afraid, which is probably good for you because you're a homeowner there and you could probably reap the benefits down the road.
You know, it's crazy, Max, for all you OG podcaster listeners out there. I've invited Max to my house like 37 times and he's still yet to appear.
Well, it's because they get there late, but one of these days.
Yeah. Hey, that's what you said last year.
I wanted to ask you something else because I'm watching Inter Miami get off to this great start, and you know, and it may be their best win, and they just blew the doors off of or a really good, or at least we thought, Orlando City team. And I'm going back to preseason, and then people are like, ah, this Inter Miami preseason, what are they doing? Losing every game. They're just decimating the regular season. I'm kind of circling back. I go, could we just relax? This just the way the preseason, I mean, that preseason tour was gave Inter Miami and Lionel Messi the last rites. Remember, everyone's going, oh, this is going to be a disaster. It could still be a disaster. And, you know, once the older players, maybe they hit a snowstorm in Utah, maybe it just gets derailed. I don't know, man. Maybe it's a reminder when you see preseason, don't take it at face value.
Yeah. Can I also throw this out there? Cause I love you and I love your followers. I love everyone. I love everyone that follows the OG Max Pavethos. Can we just for a second recognize that the internet's not real? That if somebody said something mean, it's just some random knucklehead that would never say it to your face.
Yes.
It's all friends. Let's go back to the days where we could break bread, have a drink, and have a good time, as opposed to everyone getting so effing angry that they just like, and then they fire off this like incendiary type of tweet where, I'm angry, I gotta be mad, everything's wrong, you suck, I'm right, woo! Like,
you're a fraud. Okay.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about, Max, you MLSer.
I know.
Like, forgetting all of your history. Can we just go back to the days where, like, everything was fun? Like, remember when we used to have fun with each other, people? Like, Maxi, yeah. Like, Bretos and I have fun. Like, I wish you guys could be with us every single weekend. We're heading down to Austin this weekend. We're going to have fun. Like, let's go back to the good old days, people. Please.
How would you rate the Lone Star Hotel or whatever we stay at?
Might be my favorite. Might be my favorite.
I used to be my least favorite, but the last two stays, it's my favorite. Oh, and it's the only hotel I've been to when I show up at 11 where the guy at the front desk goes, hey, you want a beer?
You want a beer? And by the way, it's like almost the worst hotel too, because all of the like snacks, they have like the best snacks in the history of snacks. And they're like, it's just this spread that's laid out and you're like, oh my gosh, free stuff. And you don't realize, but they've got like a 1930s fridge. Like you walk in, everything smells like barbecue. There's fire pits everywhere.
There's fire pits there's a few opening there. I don't want to call it a patio where it's like a communal area and everyone just hangs out.
Yeah. And then Max and I enjoy like a nice, beautiful, old fashioned made Austin style when it's all said and done. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like you and I should do a travel show.
Yeah.
Like we should do like a breakfast show. We should do something where we could like bring all of like the people together once again and be like, this is what life should be like. Breaking bread, having fun, talking soccer. Let's just be simple again like we used to be, where everyone liked each other regardless of race, nationality, religion, sex, skin color, all that BS. Like, let's just be people again.
All right. I didn't expect the podcast to take this direction, but I'm on board. Let's try. Let's kick the tires on that our little show this weekend.
Saturday morning, Max and Dunny, breakfast time.
Breakfast time. Oh, because you know what? The problem with that is I'm going to look like a jerk because they're going, what are you eating, Dunny? I'm going, I'm having oatmeal and yogurt. Max, what are you having? I'm having 12 strips of bacon.
Oh, I love it. I love you, my man.
You know what? This would be good because it'll get me to eat a lot healthier. I eat pretty healthy, but now I'm going to have to take it another level. Because when I'm on the road, I want a little bacon and some sloppy eggs. And I don't want oatmeal and a banana. I don't. But anyway.
Love you.
Oh, well, good stuff, man. We'll continue this conversation. There's a lot to talk about MLS, man. But that's really enjoying it. It's all very different. You never know what you're going to get. We'll see what we get at Austin, St. Louis. And we'll talk about the destinations we go to. But so far, Austin, right. Salt Lake. Excelente.
Specta, some would say. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you, man. You're my legend.
Attaboy. Brian Dunsett, you can catch us on Austin St. Louis this Saturday on MLS Season Pass Apple TV. That's all the time we have for the Soccer OG for this week. We'll be back again next week. Until I see you, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, senores y señoras, Placido Domingo.